Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the ALS Association Greater Philadelphia Chapter Podcast. As always, my name is Tony Heil. I'm the Director of Communications and Public Policy here at the Greater Philadelphia Chapter. If you've been listening to our podcast series, you've heard people talk about general ALS research, what it's like living with ALS as a person diagnosed with a disease, people who are legislators, Brian Cutler was on here, people who are involved as family caregivers, walk team leaders, and many, many more perspectives on this disease. Today, we're going to be focusing on patient care, as we're doing with some other podcasts, and about some specific issues with Marissa Palovac, who's a speech-language pathologist with Good Shepherd Penn Partners, working with the ALS Association for the past 10 years. So she's a great expert on things like speech, swallowing, and other things that the general population might not understand much about ALS, but every person that's faced with a disease or a family caregiver is going to have to face head-on once they come to the clinic. And Marissa has been working on this topic for many years. She's a great expert on it, and she's going to help us alleviate some misconceptions and fears people can have and provide some good education. So, Marissa, thanks for joining our podcast.
Sure.
So, first of all, tell me a little bit about your expertise, what brings you to this topic, and what you do here at the clinic.
Okay. My role here at the clinic is to see patients that are having difficulty chewing and or swallowing, and if that's affecting their speech, we can help with that as well. I typically see our patients with our nutritionist because if they're having trouble chewing and swallowing, their nutrition may be affected as well, so we can try to piggyback off of each other.
Mm-hmm. And I know that the ALS Association is big on having a clinic setting where they can get multidisciplinary care.
Yes.
That's the kind of care that people would want to see at most types of those clinics, correct?
Absolutely, absolutely.
And so when do you come into the picture to talk to someone with ALS?
So it varies. People with ALS can start at different stages that we may come through. So if somebody comes and they have first noticed trouble with walking or hand weakness, we may not be involved in their plan of care until they start to notice changes with their chewing, swallowing, and speech. Mm-hmm. Typically those three go together because the same muscles that you talk with are the same muscles that you eat with. And so if somebody is noticing that when they talk, their speech sounds slurred, particularly at night or when they're more tired, their speech may not be as clear. They may also find that they're having trouble chewing their foods or moving food around their mouth. So when people start to notice any sort of changes with their speech, and or swallowing, and changes with swallowing could be something like every time they drink water, they notice that they're coughing more, or when they take pills, they feel like they're getting stuck, or certain foods that they eat are getting caught in their throat or in their mouth, and at that point is when we would want to come in and see what's going on.
So to someone like me who's unfamiliar with those kind of issues, I would just think that swallowing or eating is I'm having trouble swallowing, but you have a lot of smaller things. You can get to those answers more quickly than someone like me would.
Absolutely. And the one thing I always tell patients when I'm first meeting them is be careful what you read on the internet, because there is some degree of normalcy to trouble swallowing. We all might pick up a bottle of water while we're walking and it might choke on it, go down the wrong pipe. What I tell people is when you start to notice a consistency, mm-hmm. So every time you eat popcorn, you notice that little kernels are getting stuck, or rice, or every time you drink liquid at a dinner meal, you're coughing. So when you can put a consistency to the trouble that you're having, that's when we would want to intervene.
Great. And so how do you intervene when they come here? Is it, do you talk to them? Do you talk to them and a family member? What does that entail?
So as a speech pathologist, there's many different tools that we can use to assess somebody's swallowing. The most common tool that we use in this clinic with this population is what we call a bedside evaluation, where the first and foremost, we will talk to a patient and their family, and we will ask questions of what have you noticed? Ask questions of the kinds of foods that they're eating. Are there foods that they're avoiding? Are there foods that are causing them more difficulty? Once we can ask those questions and get more answers, we then will go ahead and do an evaluation where we may give different kinds of food, and a speech pathologist can put a stethoscope to your neck to actually listen to the way the food's going down and listen for certain sounds that we may hear that may be indicative of a problem that we're seeing. But the most important thing that I tell patients is that with this disease, fatigue plays a huge role. So you may come to clinic today and we may do a swallowing study and get a very different picture of what's going on later at night if we gave you that same food. So for example, if we give you some cracker here and you start to do well with it and everything sounds fine, that doesn't mean if you go home tonight and you're more fatigued, you may not have trouble with it. So a lot of what we do is actually talking to the patient and getting a much clearer picture of what they're feeling, because they're feeling it, they're living it. And so that's what we need to establish. There are instrumental tools that can be done. Something like a modified barium swallow are tools that can be done. We don't tend to do them here at our clinic as frequently because, again, you're putting somebody in an X-ray machine and you're propping them in this great position that they may not be able to sit in at home because they don't have the tools for that. And you're only getting a picture of what they look like at that point in time. It doesn't give you a clear picture of when the fatigue sets in, what's going to happen. So a lot of what we do here is more talking to the patient, educating, and like I said, maybe using a stethoscope to listen at bedside to see if there's anything that we can hear to help with.
So a lot of your job then is, when you talk to them, it's a lot about changing their general lifestyle and making it comfortable?
Absolutely. It could be changing the kinds of foods, the way that you position your head, the consistency and thickness of maybe the liquids that you're drinking. Maybe some people do better with a thinner liquid, maybe some people do better with a thicker liquid. Whether drinking from a straw is more helpful to one patient or not as helpful to somebody that might be having weakness around their lips, a straw would not be a great idea. But for somebody else who has good strength in their lips, a straw may be good because it can control the flow and the amount of liquid. Rather than if you pick up a bottle and you tilt your head back, that could cause trouble. So kind of assessing different situations of eating too. So thickening liquids, changing your head positioning, changing maybe utensils or the cups that you drink from, those sorts of things.
So that's important. You were saying don't just go on the internet because you might go on and people will say, do this, this worked for me, but every person is very different.
Absolutely. And then that is the number one important thing. A speech pathologist should evaluate people. You will read about different changes of head positioning that may work for some people, but that change, depending on where you're having the difficulty in your throat, could be more difficult for you or present more problems. So there's anatomical reasons why we change people's head positions, and it's not something that you definitely want to try on your own without having it assessed by a speech pathologist, because it could create more problems than the good use that it's doing.
And some of those problems that could happen if you take on some other risk on your own are those things that could be lasting. I mean, obviously choking is an issue, but mm-hmm. with fatigue and how the ALS progresses,
absolutely,
I can see things being a big problem.
Absolutely. And with choking, what we worry about, common thing is people say, well, I feel like it went down the wrong pipe.
Right.
And when somebody says that, that's a red flag, because the wrong pipe is the windpipe. Mm-hmm. And if it's going down the windpipe, it's going into your airway and could potentially go into the lungs. And if things frequently start going into the lungs, we worry about pneumonias forming. And with people with this disease have weakened respiratory muscles, they may not be able to cough as well to bring those things out that enter the lung. And so you can have bigger problems that could happen if things chronically are going into the lung. So that's really what we're trying to avoid. We're trying to avoid any sort of choking or anything entering into the airway that could cause problems.
Well, that sounds important to me, because as you're explaining that, it just reinforces why the multidisciplinary approach is important, because I'm sure you end up having to talk to the neurologist, the nurse, everyone else here to make sure that it's going forward with their plan.
Absolutely.
Because they could be having all these other health issues, and it's because something that the speech pathologist would need to talk to.
Absolutely.
I wouldn't get that as a person.
Absolutely. And when we talk about fatigue, we may have somebody that says they don't finish their whole meal. They used to eat their whole place when it came out, and now they're eating smaller portions. Well, the question becomes, are you eating smaller portions because your muscles of your throat are getting more tired, your muscles of chewing are getting more tired, and you're getting full quicker? Or if you have hand weakness, are you getting tired from actually lifting the food to your mouth from the plate? In which case, an occupational therapist may want to come in and help me figure out a different way to be able to present the food to the people so that fatigue level can be diminished and can help with swallowing and get their nutrition better. So you can kind of see where the multidisciplinary, you know, approach comes in here.
So before we talked on the podcast, I was asking about different technologies, but really you're not just talking about assistive speech technology. Through your role as a speech pathologist, you might be getting all sorts of technologies people need from talking to the whole clinic.
Absolutely. So there's feeding technologies in terms of utensils that would be better that an occupational therapist can assess, different plates, different kinds of cups that would make it easier. A feeding tube is another instrument that we sometimes talk about with people that are having trouble swallowing and difficulty maintaining their weight, difficulty drinking enough to maintain their hydration, difficulty getting their pills in. So we assess to see when is it appropriate to start talking about those sorts of things. In addition to some of those speech generating devices that Elisa Brownlee may have spoken about in previous podcasts for assistive technology.
So that's good to note. So do you talk to these people very early on, knowing like, well, this is something that you might need to think about in the future, and these are some things that are available, or is it something that you wait longer?
You know, I go off of what the patients want to hear. It's very individualized. Some patients come to their first clinic and meet me, and they want to hear everything, and they want to know everything that may come down the pipe. And then we have other patients that say, no, we want to know as we need to know. So I base all of the information that I give to somebody on what they want to hear at that point in time.
Are patients usually surprised that, oh, you're going to meet with a speech pathologist today?
Absolutely, yeah. Most patients, unless they've had family in a medical field, they think that speech pathologists work with children and help with maybe articulation or stuttering and things like that. And while there are wonderful speech therapists out there that do that, we also have this portion of our profession that works with adults and people with trouble swallowing and communicating and things like that.
And so from your first time you're speaking with them, you're able to alleviate a lot of fears right from the get-go.
You know, that's my goal. The one thing I always tell patients, for me, I think eating is a very social activity. It's what do we do with friends, family? We go to eat. Holidays, everything's centered around a meal. And when somebody's having trouble swallowing, that becomes very it could be an anxiety-producing event for people, and it can be very stressful. And my goal is to take that away and to try to make it as pleasurable an experience for people as it was before. The one thing that I always say to patients is, what is it that you like to eat that you are having so much difficulty with? I want to try to figure out a way to help you be able to enjoy that again. Because my feeling is that this disease is taking so much away from people already that I don't want to take anything else away from them. So if there's any way that I can try to be able to get them to taste something that they have enjoyed, I will try to figure out as best I can to make that happen.
And you're, like you said, eating is a social thing. Obviously, speech is social as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
So a lot of your work also helps family members, right, in terms of how they can communicate, how they can work with
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think for the speech perspective, the number one thing that I've heard in all this time is that patients, caregivers, and people that are listening to the patient, they don't know how to respond to the patient. It's kind of the elephant in the room. They can hear these speech changes happening, but they don't know whether to tell the patient, I didn't hear you, I didn't understand you, because they don't want to offend them, they don't want to hurt their feelings.
Right.
So then they sit back and they try to figure out what they're saying and try to make sense of it, and then there's all of these communication breakdowns. So the number one thing I tell patients and families, but patients more importantly, is take the elephant out of the room. Sit down and say, listen, this is what's going on. This is how I feel today. I'm having a hard time communicating. I'm feeling really tired. If you don't understand me, this is what I want you to do to let me know that you didn't understand me. So you take the pressure off yourself and you take the pressure off the listener. Mm-hmm. And it opens all lines of communication.
Yeah, I've learned that myself from working with our patient services people and going to events and seeing someone I know with ALS. And now they're using a device, and I know how to communicate with them better from listening to not just interrupt them. I ask them, is this how you want me to communicate?
Absolutely. And that's the number one thing, is asking them, you know, if we go out, do you want me to repeat for you? If you have a story, do you want me to tell the story for you? Do you want to tell the story? Do you want me to be your interpreter? How do you want to work it? So that there's communication going on beforehand, so that there's no communication breakdowns and no one's feeling like they don't know how to deal with this
change. So in a way, you're really helping not just to make that job easier for the family caregiver, but to maintain that strong relationship.
Absolutely.
Because the relationships are really important as they go forward with this terrible disease.
Absolutely.
So you as a speech pathologist, you work with swallowing, you work with them and with the family members. If you see, I don't know how many people you see in a day, let's say you saw 10 people in a day with ALS, you're really seeing 20 people in a day.
As
a
result, could be, yeah.
Right? Because you're seeing them and their person they're with.
Absolutely, yeah,
explaining things
yeah.
So when they come, how does a person with ALS and their family member, what's the best way for them to create a plan? Do they do that with you? Like, do they have to have a plan?
You know, I think when you're first coming to a clinic, having no plan is probably the best thing, and to just come with open ears, open mind, and a tablet to write things down and a list of questions that you might have.
Just like if you want to be a good golfer, it's best if you're not golfing already.
Absolutely.
Because then you don't have mistakes you're making.
Yeah, there's no bad habits to break,
exactly.
Essentially. But I always say, before you come to any appointment, write down your list of questions first, so that you don't want to walk out of there thinking, oh, I forgot to ask this or I forgot to say that. But come with open ears and listen to what anybody has to say that's there to help with you, and go from there. If you are having trouble swallowing and you want to keep a food log, or you just want to, you know, sort of jot down what you've noticed, I think that's great. And if you don't, that's okay too, because we will help kind of guide you through this, mm-hmm. as you come back from clinic to clinic. And you'll have a better idea of how to approach these changes that you're having once you've come a couple of times. But I think that if you want to plan ahead with questions, that's the best way. But the most important thing, I think, is to come open ears, open mind, and just get all the information you can from us, because that's why we're here.
And I would expect, and I could be wrong, but that if you go into a eating type of situation, like you're talking about with swallowing, and you go in fearful, you're going to make the problem worse.
You can.
So
I mean, anxiety always makes any problem worse.
Yeah.
Anxiety can always make any problem worse. So there's that factor.
And it's important to let people know that your experience with ALS might not be like anyone else's, so you might not have these bad issues for a while.
Absolutely.
Or you might have them tomorrow, so just be open-minded. Be prepared.
Absolutely. I always say I don't have a crystal ball, so I don't know what's going to happen, and all we can do is take it day by day.
So what other resources would you recommend, aside from not going around to crazy blogs or anything like that? Like, what are there any resources you would recommend people to look at early?
I think anything that comes from ALSA, mm-hmm. any information that you can get from the ALS Association, I think is probably your best start.
Mm-hmm.
There's a thousand things out there that we can recommend and send people to read. I think it's all individualized. So I think more importantly is your healthcare providers, using them as your sounding board for anything that you may think of or have questions about or anything that you might want to know about. Those are the best people to ask. And then if you're going to go on the internet, any information that's coming from the ALS Association is probably your best place to look.
Yeah, it's good to know it's coming from a reputable source and not Jim's school of,
yeah, exactly.
of speech. So finally, are there any fears that you want to make sure that people are not afraid of? I guess that's not the best way of saying it, but are there any things you want to make sure people are aware of as they go forth, so that they're not as scared or that they know to ask for anything like that when they go to the clinic?
I think from my perspective, I think, you know, the number one thing is that you're not going to be alone. You're part of a clinic now. You're part of a family, so to speak. So we're always here to help. You can always get in contact with somebody from our clinic, and we will be able to help you as soon as we can. From a swallowing perspective, a lot of people have this fear of, oh my God, I'm going to wake up one day and I'm not going to be able to swallow anything. And it has not been my experience to see that in the past 10 years here. I think the changes that you see with swallowing become start out subtle, and you'll see a consistent pattern to it, but it's not going to be like you're going to wake up one day and not be able to eat anything or not be able to drink anything. It's going to be changes that you're going to start to notice progressively. So I think that's the number one fear I would want to relieve from somebody is there's a certain degree of normalcy to things going down the wrong pipe or things getting stuck. So don't become hypervigilant and just start to keep a log and notice yourself any changes that you're seeing. And if you're seeing things progressing rapidly, call and see if we can get you in sooner to be seen.
So to the people that have ALS, continue living your life as well as you can and come to the clinic, and the clinic team is going to help you continue to live your life as well as you can.
Absolutely.
Well, I really appreciate this. This was very enlightening to me as a person who is not a medical expert, even though my mom would like me to be, I'm sure. And again, you can go to our website, www.alsphiladelphia.org, to learn more about our treatment centers. You can go to National's website, www.alsa.org, to find out about national clinics and centers across the country. And you can also find our other podcasts, alsphiladelphia.org/podcasts, or on iTunes at ALS Philadelphia. And of course, if you want to get involved and help, there's the Walk to Defeat ALS coming up near you. And you can go to GPC for Greater Philadelphia Chapter. That's www.gpcwalktodefeatals.org. Continue to support us so we can continue providing these services and making sure everyone with ALS gets the support they need. So thank you, Marissa. I really appreciate you giving your help today.
No problem. Anytime.